Hi, everybody. It's your best friend, Sarah. It's official. I have scheduled my tonsillectomy, and I'm so sad about it. I know that if someone called in and said this, I'd be like, what, are you going to spend all your free time being sad about it? And then you have it, and then you've got to recuperate, and I should just live it up and not think about it until it happens. When it's scheduled, and I'll do what I have to do, and that's it. But boy, I went in for my meeting with the surgeon. And there's so much shit you got to do before you get your tonsils that I have to, like, get all these tests and do all this pre-op stuff. And, I just get scared about doing a technically elective surgery, though. I got a second opinion. I mean, I definitely have to get my tonsils out. If I didn't have to get my tonsils out, I would not. But I've been told that I need to get my tonsils out because I had that big surgery where I almost died. That was an emergency surgery on my throat. Then, after that, you know, I was like in a coma for 7 days. It was a big traumatic thing. But I lived. I had a 50-50 chance of survival. But I lived. That was right after I first met, right before I first met you, Raj. And then, like a year ago, so the doctor said, this is a fluke. What happened, it's never going to happen to you again. A 1 in a trillion chance. Well, 1 in a trillion happened, and it happened again, but I caught it earlier. But it was with no numbing, nothing. He just, in the office, like, pried my jaws open and went in with a needle, and I was screaming, I was flailing, I was, you know, your human body just fights to survive. And he stabbed this abscess down in my throat through my mouth and had to drain it. My poor love, Rory, was standing there watching me scream and cry and in worse pain than the surgery. Because I think during the surgery, they just gave me like all the morphine in the world. So anyway, here we go. It happened again and it's not ever supposed to happen again. So now he says, the tonsils gotta go. Too risky. He said, you're gonna be in Timbuktu and it's gonna happen again and you're gonna die. So I've gotta do it. And here's what he told me, my doctor. He said, you're gonna get your tonsils out and you're gonna go home and you're gonna have 10 days of excruciating pain. He said that it will feel like Satan's penis. Satan's thorny, spiked penis is down my throat for 10 days, which is probably problematic, but we're friends. We've become friends now because I see him so much. So I'm not looking forward to it. He says it's 3 days. The first 3 days is terrible pain. Then you feel like you're getting better. And then on the fifth day, the caked, dried blood from inside your throat and mouth start chipping off and making fresh wounds. And you have to spit out this hard blood with these open wounds in your throat. And then it's, you know, 7 more days of terrible pain. And then for the rest of the month, nothing. I think soft foods and, you know, you get to eat ice cream. You get to eat pudding. I mean, I get to eat those things anyway, by the way. I pointed that out to him. You know, I can eat those things anyway. I can enjoy an ice cream, a popsicle, a pudding. What do you think? I'm on some special celebrity diet? I'm not. I eat bread. I love bread. You know, I'm not gluten-free. I'm not ice cream. You know, I like stuff. I like these things. And so it'll be nice that I can have them. But I already can have them without pain. But anyway, I gotta do it, and that's that. That's the end of that. I gotta do it, and that's that. And I'll just be fine and enjoy myself, and then I'll do what I have to do, and then I'll suffer for a couple weeks, and then I'll be great. All right, talk myself through it. All right, what do we got? Let's take some voicemails.
You left me a message. Now I'm playing it for the world. Let's hear some voicemails.
Hi, Sarah. My name's Jenna. I recently had two babies back to back, and I'm sort of reclaiming this relationship with my body and my body image and how I see myself. I've always been maybe bordering on an angry feminist. I was brought up by angry feminists. I worked in rape crisis counseling. Like, I feel like I pretty deeply understand the history of catcalling and the power structure it's embedded in, and like the violence of the rape culture it's embedded in. But I got catcalled the other day, and I really couldn't help but think of it as a compliment. And I think it's just because my self-esteem and self-image have been all over the place, but like I really kind of put a smile on my face, and I'm really disappointed with myself. And I'm just wondering, I guess, if you've had that experience, or I don't know, your thoughts on that issue. Yeah, thanks so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Well, it's about power, the cat calls and stuff. So yeah, when I was young and I was objectified by grown men as I walked by, it was intimidating. It was really scary. It was fucked up. But as I got older, and more empowered in myself, and that stuff kind of ended up feeling adorable. So it really depends on where you are in life. I mean, when I was a teenager waiting tables and my boss like jerked off in front of me, I was terrified and felt ashamed and blamed myself and all those things you hear. And I just think, oh man, I wish he had the fucking lips to do that now. But he doesn't. They know better than that. But yeah, back to catcalls. It's shitty when you're vulnerable and young and scared, and it's like being carded when you're way over 18 as you get older and more powerful in yourself and confident. But I do have a funny story because I was walking down the street. I was living in New York City. I was in my 20s, and I got like whistled by a construction, whistled at from a construction worker. And I was in a shitty mood, and I just was like turned around, was like, ugh. And then the guy goes, not you. Yeah, that was a tough pill to swallow. It's like, oh no, not, why don't you, is there something wrong? You're not attract. Anyway, you can enjoy it. You're in a place where you can enjoy it. Yes. I remember, I can't remember why, but like cops broke into my sister's house. I don't know what happened, like an alarm went off or something, and she was completely naked. And she was at the top of the stairs, and the cop went in and looked up and was like, oh, sorry, ma'am. And she was like, that's what I got? Sorry, ma'am, and a horrified look. But yeah, no, he acted appropriately. And but yeah, it's sometimes you're in a place where I'm kind of I'm more famous for my like brain stuff, so like I get excited when I'm objectified, but I'm also 51, so like I like when my husband objectifies me. No, we're not really married. Don't freak out. All right, what else?
Hey Sarah, this is Milo from Sydney, Australia. Love your show. Been listening for a little bit of a while now. Just a little thought. I'm a local social worker working
Sounds like he's on a
homelessness,
kayak.
more with young people being taken under the care of the minister. I guess my observation and my question is, do you believe the United States is divided as people think it is? Because from our perspective in Australia, it seems that way. It seems that a lot of opinions here is that Americans can go from 0 to 100 in temperament very quickly. And they get really divided over race. If there's like a collision, a car collision or an interaction between someone in the line where someone pushes in, it
The
seems to
fuck is
go
this guy?
straight about race. and how you have no right for an opinion because you're this race or that race, and it seems very divided, and it doesn't seem like a very cohesive society in regards to, I guess, a free and liberal society standards. Just wanted to get your opinion and see what you think. I did live in Michigan for a bit, and I personally never experienced that myself in the 3 years living in Michigan, but I see it more now through, I guess, TV, news, podcasts such as yourself. All right, love you. Bye.
I mean, I would say social media has exposed a lot about the world we're living in here in the United States, especially initially. I mean, like I said it early when I first started the podcast, just like going like, God, there's an epidemic of cops killing unarmed Black people. And then I was like, oh, that's how it's always been. I'm just aware of it now because of social media. So there's that aspect. But there's also the fact that, you know, any video that gets passed around and clicked on is going to be a Karen or a, you know, some video that is juicy, you know, on social media and, well, all media. Yeah, we're on the verge of civil war from what you see, I would imagine. Certainly what we see in person tends to be a different story, I think. If you disagree, please call in. But in person, when you're in general, other than various Karen videos that you see, in person, when you're waiting in line at the grocery store or making conversation in line or rooting for your home team at a local stadium or on the subway, no, not really. You don't get a Civil War vibes. It's like just, you know, people all doing their stuff together and separately and living regular lives. And, you know, face-to-face, people are left far less brazen. The more misinformation that spreads and the less we can decipher what is true and the less we have a commonality of, like, a baseline truth, the worse it is going to get. Even in real life, it's not, certainly not getting better, but it's way better. We're much better than our virtual selves, I would say. I hope.
Here's some ads.
Calm. You know, mental health is so important. And even when everything's too much, or I'm about to like get into an argument with my love or anything, I need a minute. You know, I need a timeout, and Calm really works for that. And it gets you to sleep. It gets you to meditate. It's all these guided meditations. And I really, really like it. Let's focus on you for a moment. How are you feeling? How are things going? If your answer was anything less than amazing, I'm going to help you. Our partners at Calm have the tools you need to feel your best. Honestly, just getting quiet every day does so much for your mental health. Your day is filled with all those to-dos, you know, laundry, emails, errands, cooking dinner, and before you know it, you're preparing to do it all again tomorrow. When is there time to focus on what you need? With Calm, you can prioritize your most important to-do, which is taking a little time for yourself every day. We're partnering with Calm, the number one mental health wellness app, to give you the tools that improve the way you feel. Reduce stress and anxiety through guided meditations, improve focus with curated music tracks, and rest and recharge with Calm's imaginative sleep stories for children and for adults. There's even new daily movement sessions designed to relax your body and uplift your mind. The mind and body, they're connected, baby. Otherwise, how would you explain nervous diarrhea? If you go to calm.com/Sarah, you will get a special offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription, and new content is added every single week. Over 1 million people around the world use Calm to take care of their minds. Calm is ready to help you stress less, sleep more, and live a happier, healthier life. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/Sarah. Go to calm.com/Sarah for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/Sarah. Fume, baby. I got one right now. I love it. You know, I love this thing. It satisfies my oral fixation, gives me a little flavor on the tongue. I look really cool with it. You know what Fume is? It's this natural inhaler designed for a better, safer, and natural way to quit cigarettes. It's a no smoke, no vape, no nicotine replacement for that hand-to-mouth habit of smoking. Replace the habit and feel good doing it. Fume handcrafts wooden inhalers and uses cores infused with plant oils studied to curb cravings. They have flavors like peppermint and conker. I've got conker in here. With minty notes to simulate menthol cigarettes and other flavors like cozy chai and lemon berry bliss for a sweeter experience. And all of the flavors are 100% natural. No harmful chemicals, no artificial flavors, absolutely no nicotine. They've got thousands of five-star reviews from smokers who have tried everything else, and this worked. Whether you're a smoker or an ex-smoker who still struggles with cravings, Fume is the perfect tool for you. Head to breathefume.com/Sarah and use promo code Sarah to save 10% off your entire order. That's 10% off your entire order when you head to breathefume.com/Sarah and use code Sarah.
And we're back.
Hi, Sarah. Brian here. So you've spoken really openly a lot about your mental health and the manner in which you mitigate it using chemicals and such. So I'm pretty sure I'm crazy, and I've always resisted using drugs to help that because I feel like they'd make me dumber. However, I'm starting to think that that's a really stupid way to feel. And you're clearly brilliant, which is why I listen to you. So I guess if I had to formulate that into a question, my question would be, how do you feel about how mental health medication has affected your intelligence? That's all. Also a big fan. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. It might be true that the 75 milligrams I'm currently on of Zoloft daily dumbs me down in some way or slows me down or mutes stuff. I don't know. Because what I notice is it allows me to live. And not everything we take is for optimal intelligence. I smoke weed. You didn't mention that. That dumbs me down every night. It dumbs me. There may be glimmers of genius that come from it, but mostly it really dumbs me down and makes me wonderfully relaxed. So I don't know. For me, my goal is not always optimal brain function, but optimal happiness, joy. And I also do want to be as sharp as possible. Yes, I feel my brain wasting away a little bit as I get older. I'm like terrified of dementia. But the antidepressant I take, or the whatever Zoloft is, a serotonin reuptake inhibitor, I'm extremely grateful for. And maybe I'd be sharper without it, but I'd also be paralyzed-ier without it. Emotionally, anyway. So I believe I need it for what I need to do and what I like to do in my life. And it sounds like you feel you need medication. And maybe you should try it. I don't know. All of this stuff, all of it. Weed, antidepressants, anything you're taking to change your chemical makeup or balance or whatever in your human body, it boils down to one question. Is the juice worth the squeeze? And for me, it is. All right, what else?
Hey, Sarah. It's Chris from Massachusetts. I have a question for you about medication for depression, anxiety, ADHD for children. I was diagnosed with ADHD at age 27, which explained a lot of why certain parts of, you know, my childhood had been tricky and I didn't really understand myself. And now I do more. And I found, you know, medication that really worked, and it was sort of just like putting on glasses for the first time and seeing how things can be. But at the same time, I'm aware of certain changes that it causes for me in my personality, nothing major, but there's pros and cons, as there is with lots of medications. But I'm a parent now, and I have a son who's 10, and I see so much of myself reflected back in me. And at the same time, you know, you want to help them not go through certain things you did, but also I don't know if I would be the person I am if I had been put on these medications as a kid. And, you know, while there was parts of growing up that were really hard, I love who I am today. And I don't know if, you know, those hardships are important. And I don't know if, you know, my child taking the medication that I take now as a 10-year-old would be good or bad or the right decision or not. And I don't know. Parenthood is such a reflection of yourself back at yourself, and it's lovely and terrifying and horrible and wonderful, and it's a lot. And I just want to do the right thing. I love my kids, and I thought maybe you'd have some insight. Would you have wanted to be found your medication that helped you through your times? I'm rereading your book, Bedwetter. Would you have wanted to have found your solution earlier? And do you think that would have changed the person that you became? Love your podcast. Bye.
Oh, so much to say. I don't know where to start. I get appreciating your struggles and how they make you who you are today. I certainly feel the same. I wouldn't change anything about the struggles of my childhood because it made me who I am. I would also never go back and relive it. On the other hand, we want for our children better than what we had, right? And on the other hand, still, you want them to struggle and persevere through things in order to have what they have, you know, in order to grow through them and know that they can persevere. When we're talking about chemically, you know, like it's, you know, people talk about mental health as if it caring for it is elective instead of taking care of something that is a problem. You know, this isn't, I'm not being articulate. If you had diabetes and you need to take insulin, then you take insulin. And then if your kid has diabetes, you go, well, I want him to struggle a little. Like I did. No, you give him insulin immediately because you recognize it or whatever it is. You know, you're seeing your kid go through what you went through and you recognize it as ADHD, is I'm guessing. And, you know, I don't think that you should decide for your kid that he should struggle through that. We know more now than we did when you were a kid, right? You know, I mean, like you ask, would I want to have been put on drugs as a kid in depression? I was, but this is when drugs were brand new. And I was given, this doesn't sound real, 4 Xanax 4 times a day, 16 Xanax pills a day. And it was not okay. I just was a zombie. And then I had to go off of it very carefully because the person who put me on it was so irresponsible. So I can't really fathom it. Now you're living in a time where these things are, we know so much more about it. And you're recognizing it in your kid. You've got to take care of it, you know, or have him. Now don't assume that he has exactly what you have. Or that you're recognizing things about yourself and your kids, so it must equal this. But you should take them to the doctor and find out, and do what you can to help them. You're not going to be able to, nor should you, watch your child struggle through something that there's an answer for. And yes, those struggles made you, but you can't know what you know now and let your kids struggle through it. I don't think that that's an option for you with your kid, right? But you can try other things before meds. There's always like holistic ways, new holistic things that they're learning and that are being kind of discovered. I don't know them, but surely by now there are other things and maybe they'll work. For me, I will say actually sports was really helpful as a kid because it got me out of my head and out of my body. And for that hour or two of game, I was not convincing myself of the worst or worrying or, you know, spiraling. I was focused on a ball and it really helped. That said, because of all the sports I played, my body is broken now. Oh man, no one tells you that sports age shitty. Yeah, I don't know. Give them the drugs. See what the doctor says. Get a second opinion. You know, it's scary with kids. You don't want to like medicate them unnecessarily, but you want to take care of them. And we have miracle things now that help our brains. You know, trust me, there will be several other ways that your kid will be fucked up or you'll fuck your kid up unintentionally to make him very cool and interesting as an adult. I don't know. Sorry, not every answer is a winner. What else we got?
Hi, Sarah. This is Ryan. I'm calling from the Gold Coast of Australia, visiting my grandmother, but live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hmm. I wanted to hear a story of any one-night stands that you've ever had that left a lasting impression on you. I just had a great one in Brisbane, Australia, with a beautiful boy named Ashley. And, just any one-night stands that, you know, you could think about long relationships with but knew would never happen just because of timing. Love the podcast. Love you. Thanks for all you do.
This is not a holier than thou thing. I haven't really had one night stands per se. I mean, I've definitely slept around. I was extremely sexually active with a handful of men all at the same time, like the year I was 20. I sowed every single oat the year I was 20 and I don't take it back. Did I get a reputation? Yeah, I did. I mean, I kept Noxema in my backpack so I could like wash my face wherever I landed. Like I lost my virginity to a comedian when I was 19. After that, I loved it. You know, I was like, what do his balls look like? What do his balls look like? What do his balls look like? I was curious and free. And I remember my best friend, Carrie, at the time, she was at college and she was like, I'm a female chauvinist. Like I don't, you know, and I did get into that headspace of like really not understanding that I could hurt people's feelings. I was just like, I'm free. I did, but I didn't cheat. I was just like, you don't worry where I am when I'm not with you. And when I'm with you, just enjoy that time. And I was just very free. But they weren't one night stands. They were like comedians I still know today, 30 years later, which is unfortunate. Because, you know, ideally you sow all your wild oats and then you move to New York and start a career. And I did that in reverse. All right, what else?
Hi, Sarah. This is Alex. I am sending you this message from Baku, Azerbaijan, in the other side of the world. I love your podcast and I really love how your English pronunciation is helping me improve my English because my mother language is Spanish. So listening to you is really helping. Thank you so much. So my message is about this Jordan Peterson guy. I have a friend here. We used to share a lot of thoughts in many things, a lot of ideas. We could have discussions and agree on a lot of things. And now she started like listening to Jordan Peterson, reading his books. And I think she's really like, really, really into this guy. And now she changed a lot of perspectives of life. Now she thinks that like men are victims and that everything that we used to agree on about feminism and the female role in society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is like bullshit. Now she's this completely different person. And I don't know, first, what do you think about Jordan Peterson? And second, what should I do with my friend? Because I'm really having a hard time talking to her. It's really like not my kind of people anymore. What do you think? Love you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. I don't know what I think about Jordan Peterson. I've read a bunch about him, and sometimes people are smart. You know, somebody wrote it this way. He's like really smart for dumb people. But I will say, like, I noticed he's got that Canadian accent, and he has some, like, a timbre to his voice that sounds very meaningful to the ear. Does that make sense at all? Like, his words have worked their way into, like, TikTok posts and, like, Instagram posts where there's, like, waterfalls and shit, and he has a great voice, and it's, like, it sounds kind of sage, and he's saying something, like, basic, but, you know, deep, but super basic, and I can see a lot of people getting sucked in. I read a little bit about him. He's weird, you know? He's like this guy, he like only eats beef, salt, and water. And he's like, wants men to be men and all this backlash, you know, as soon as like we talk about toxic masculinity or men, you know, I do see like... What you said, she sees men as victims. There are a lot of ways to interpret that. And you're probably referring to like they're victims of society today and, you know, they don't get picked first anymore and blah, blah, blah or whatever. And to that, I go, yeah, sure. I feel I have a lot of cis white male friends that are no longer being picked first for kickball. Kickball meaning jobs. But I always just say, like, yeah, it sucks. Maybe it's an overcorrection. But you know what you got to do? You got to be undeniable like everyone else but you has had to be up until now. So sorry. But I do see men as victims a lot in how society has raised men, and certainly in America over the many, many decades, hundreds of years or whatever, to not be able to express themselves, to not have feelings, that's a woman thing. You know, it's very female to express feelings or to acknowledge feelings or to wonder what this is bringing up or to, you know, any of that shit. And all that stuff comes out in some way anyway, and it usually is just like shame that converts in that can't be processed. You know, it's like sugar or something, you know? And so it turns into outward rage. You know, it's someone else's fault. You're doing everything right. You don't have to look inward. It's someone else's fault. And to be raised like that by generations of society, I do see them as victims, you know? But they got to get that shit together, realize that we're all only made of feelings and act accordingly. Anyway, so back to, what's his name? Peterson? Jordan Peterson. I don't know. The guy eats only beef, salt, and water. Like, I cannot imagine his shits. But back to your friend. Yeah, that sucks. I know it's sad. She no longer shares your, you know, feminist ideals or whatever, especially during such a fucked up and scary time. I would just think about this for a second. Love her anyway, you know? Unless, you know, you can't. Which is also okay. Relationships change over time, but you can love her anyway and stay connected in the ways that you are still connected. But if you can't, you can't. What can I say? Good luck. And thanks for calling in. And I'm glad that the diction my mother pounded into me to almost an OCD extent is helping your English. What else?
Hey, Sarah. It's Sarah, another Jewish New Englander.
Sarah.
I'm now in Georgia working in film production,
ooh,
which hopefully would lead me to work for you one day. That would be a fucking dream. But regardless, I was wondering how you felt about cockroaches. Have you ever seen the ones here with, like, the wings? They fly and they, like, land on you. Or when they land on the floor, it sounds like a... Like, you know what
that
it
was
is.
Such...
One flew into my, like, left eyeball last night when I was opening the door to let the dog out to pee, and I almost shat my pants. But I love ya.
Wow, I mean, you let your dog out to pee, but you almost shit your pants. Would you, like, you almost, like, pulled your pants up to take a shit? Cockroaches, yes. Do I love them? No. I have seen the giant ones. I've seen the New York ones. Obviously, I lived in New York for a long time. But I'm not super grossed out. I also feel bad because, like, their biggest sin is that they aren't cute and they eat our food, you know, like, whatever. It's you know. I try to, like, put, if I see one, I'll put it outside. You know, I'm pretty good at, like, putting it on a, like, little napkin or a piece of paper towel and putting them outside. That said, they're not really looking to be outside, you know? It's like when I try to get our house flies, I try to, like, usher them outside, and I just picture them turning around and being like, house fly, asshole. Your sandwich is my toilet. Your bathroom mirror is my living room. What, do you think I'm going to go out there? Live in a tree? It just make me wonder, like, did house flies, like, develop from after houses, whatever, I don't know. I need to drink a little more Red Bull. Roaches. Yeah, they're gross. Listen, one time I was living on Sweetser in this old apartment. It was great, though. And one day I opened up my, like, silverware drawer, and roaches were, like, crawling all through there. That was, like, felt like a horror movie. That was disgusting. I couldn't deal for a long time. I don't know how I dealt with it, but I did. And then one time I woke up in that same apartment. It was a really old building. This was like a horror movie. I woke up. Steve Agee will call in and tell you about it. I woke up and I was covered, my bedspread all covered on me and all over the floor in my whole apartment by giant termites. I had turned the heat on for the first time that year and something happened. I don't know. It was the scariest. I called Steve Agee immediately and he came over just to, like, be with me. It was so scary. And then the whole place got tented and whatever. Time goes on. Life moves on and it's fine. But yeah, do I love roaches? Obviously not. You know, they're a part of life. What is it that people say after the nuclear holocaust? All that will be left are roaches and Cher, I think somebody once said. But yeah, I mean, that shit's gross. I remember I used to work at a Mexican restaurant and I had to take out the trash at night. And at one night, I was taking out the trash and I, like, open the giant trash can and go to, like, throw the trash in. And my hand, like, touched the edge of the dumpster and it was moving. It was all maggots, just like a sea of moving maggots. Oh, God, that was something I'll never forget. That was gross. Shit's gross. You know, what are you going to do? Dad, this is the part of the show where I say subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. That really helps us stay on the air. And check us out on YouTube if you like watching with your eye holes. You don't see with their holes part. You see with the eyeball part. So, well, you know what I meant.
Hey.
Subscribe here so you don't miss an episode. And you can click here to watch the last episode if you missed it.